The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined this morning by Gabia Gedevaskeche, who is Paul Corr at The Independent, Sean Defoe, our own political correspondent, and Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at the School of Immunology in Trinity College. And where we're starting with is inside the Sunday Independent. There is another one of those Ireland Thinks polls out of which the Sunday Indo gets such great mileage. And what this one is revealing, Sean, you'll be able to explain all this to us. Fine Gael on 24% of popular support, up to Fianna Fáil on 20%, up to Independents and others, 20% down 3, and Sinn Féin 80% down 4, or 18% down 4.
Big jump, you're giving.
Indeed. Which is about half of where they peaked.
Yeah, about half of where they were 2 years ago, and actually as low as they've been since before the last general election. So all of the gains that they got in the last general election and had built on this government of change idea, gone entirely. I mean, speaking to people in Sinn Féin last night, terrible is the word they've got. It's an absolutely terrible poll.
Can they explain why, though?
But that's the thing, that most of them can't. No, and even if you look, because further polling inside in the Ireland Thinks poll in this Indo has gone into why they think it is, and when you subset that down into Sinn Féin voters and the usual asterisks, that this becomes of quite a small pool of people that you're going through. But 36% think it's a lack of clear messaging over immigration. Just 13% think it's faltering leadership. 16% think the party is seen as too establishment, and 22% other. So that kind of reflects what I've been hearing from Sinn Féin people, is this isn't one thing. And if it was immigration, it's a sort of a weird one, because you're also seeing a fall in support for the independents, who might have been seen as, anti-immigration. It also hasn't been a huge hot button topic since the campaign. In the last few weeks, it's tailed off a bit. And even in when the poll looks at what are the most important issues, immigration is actually down 12 points to 29%. Still the second most important issue behind housing, which is at 58%, which is much more on people's minds. So they can't pick at one thing. And I don't think it is one thing. I think the little bit of transfer over from the election where they didn't do as well as possible, and the poll's sort of resetting to reflect that. There's a bit of immigration in it. There's also a bit of, I mean, when was the last time Sinn Féin were truly strong on an issue? Like that they got an issue that got into the zeitgeist and you thought, oh yeah, that was a great clip from Mary Lou, or a great clip from Piers Doherty. It's been a little while on that. And then,
but
also,
I would have thought Piers Doherty would say, well, did well on Micah and have been fighting that fight. I would have thought Ona Brin would have said, I'm one of the leading voices on housing.
Would have been, I think, is your key words there, in that those issues have sort of receded into the background. I think they do have a real problem on housing, because I think a lot of people aren't buying what Owen O'Brien is selling, that he was very, very good for 2 years on housing. And now that we are seeing people getting into houses a bit more, what is it, 500 people a week are getting the keys, new first-time buyers, and you're seeing an uptick in it. A lot of the big issues for the government have been headed off a little bit. And there's no one area where you say that's a real crisis for them at the moment in the big zeitgeisty area. They also haven't had, and I wonder about this, when was the last time we had a big personal crisis, a big scandal in the government? Kind of hasn't been one for, maybe a year. I'm trying to think back when the last time the one was. So all those issues that get a lot of anger among the public have sort of receded a little bit.
We still that's have, surely there's enough in housing, and there's enough in immigration, and there's enough in cost of living. Surely there's grist there to the opposition mill.
You would think so, but they again have all faded back a little bit from the zeitgeist. Like, when was the last time you met someone who was truly hopping angry? Like, absolutely.
53106 for
Roy. Colonel text in.
Luke, the bit that amazes me in this is, whatever about a slight softening of Sinn Féin support, it is rare that there was such an absolute consensus. About 18 months ago, that was it. Game over. Give the keys of the Mercs to the leadership of Sinn Féin. They're heading into government. Prepare for a while in the opposition, lads. How do you get, and what if you're Sinn Féin, how do you build that momentum back after it has reversed?
It's very hard to do, is it? I don't know, to be honest. I mean, what strikes me is I look at the error bars on these. I'm a scientist, you see. But this is a big drop, isn't it, Sean? It's significant,
huge.
Statistically significant. So it's really happening out there. It's not just
and
some
it's
sort
a trend
of
line
anomaly of the numbers, you know. So the big challenge is, and look what happened in the UK elections, Anton, by the way. They did well in the north. You know, there's a big divide, isn't there, now between north and south in terms of support for Sinn Féin. So you wonder if in the south they can learn from the north in some way, or maybe refocus a bit. But it's very hard, isn't it, to be able to predict what they might do next.
It's also interesting in the context of the UK elections. If we had a first past the poll system, the government parties would now be looking at a majority of 9,000 seats off those popularity numbers. Gabby, your explanation for that shift?
Well, I would make the point on housing, for example. So this week in the Dáil, we saw Sinn Féin hammer the Oscar Traynor affordable roads or affordable home scheme, saying, you know, one of the house prices in it is 475,000, extremely not affordable. If you look at the poll, housing is still top number one issue for people. But interestingly, even though it is the number one issue for people and Sinn Féin are in the Dáil hammering it and they're putting out their social media videos, it's not quite hitting and it's not quite having the same impact. That figure of 18% in the poll today is the lowest in 4 years. I mean, you cannot underestimate how seismic that figure is. It is in the teens. It is a complete collapse, I would argue, of support for Sinn Féin. And it does put them into trouble. Now, having said all of that, yes, they had a very poor European local election. They had a very good weekend in the north, you know, the biggest party. But what does that mean for the next general election? And how does Mary Lou McDonald claw that support back? Also, the poll asks, who is most likely to be the Taoiseach after the next general election? Simon Harris is roaring ahead there. I think Mary Lou McDonald is in third place. So people are really, for some reason, not buying what Sinn Féin is selling. And I think a part of the messaging that's an issue is that Sinn Féin has become almost an establishment party. You know, this argument from the far right, well, sure, you've betrayed the Irish people, you haven't done enough. Of course they can't do very much because they're in opposition, they need to be in government to implement policies and make actual changes. But for some reason it just seems to be hitting them where it hurts. I also make the point that relatively, you know, the economy is doing pretty well, people are more or less full employment, the budget, we're going to have loads of money for it. So those conditions create a positive environment for really any government. We haven't had any
major... Most of those pertained when Sinn Féin was in the 30s. Most of them.
That's true, but I think at the time, the cost of living particularly squeezed people. We were maybe coming out of COVID. People were just, you know, they had come out of 2-3 years of just, some of them would argue, nonsense restrictions, and they were just fed up in general. But certainly things have improved now. You know, we have this Harris hop that's benefiting Fine Gael. They're on 24%. Like, it's not the best result ever, but certainly puts them in a very good place ahead of the next election.
They're falling over themselves. Well, they get asked the question a lot, Sean, so they sort of have to answer it. But this thing of whether or not we are going to see an early election, Ivan Yates was pointing to the early selections being required. And when this was put to the Taoiseach, I think it was the Taoiseach who said that, well, of course, you need a couple of weeks to get a run in and get everybody with their feet on the desk. If you were them and you're looking at this, would you say, oh, the autumn is looking tempting?
I would, yes. And I think that's exactly what they're saying behind the scenes, despite Simon Harris being very emphatic that he's saying, oh, no, we're definitely going to March and we're going full term. They're not. It's going to be probably an early November election.
Or you're nailing your colours to the mast.
Play it back to me. Yeah, I think anywhere between October 25th and November 15th is where the election date will land. Probably less likely to be in the October now. I had always thought it would be October 25th because it's the weekend before the clocks go back. You have that little bit more daylight and people are in a bit of a better mood. But I think it's probably too tight a timeline now if your budget is on the 1st of October to get all of the rush all of that through and get it done. I don't think we're going on November 8th because there's something big happening across the water in the US on November 8th. So November 15th possibly emerges, or
November 15th, that's a manky time of the year to be knocking on doors, isn't it?
So is any time from there. You know, you're talking there and through to March, everyone's in a bad mood. February, you're broken, you've broken your commitment to get fit and all the rest of it.
You're cancelling your holidays, Sean, there for that time of the year. You're obviously going to be around very busy.
Well, I'm trying to plan a wedding date at the moment.
It won't be around, it won't be November.
We're talking about the first few weeks of November and that's gone out the window. So yes, I think that is when it's going to be, and I think they will strike. I think Harris is saying no because as soon as you say we're in an election, everything stops. I remember talking to one advisor towards the end of the term of the last government, and they came in and there was a big bundle of boxes in the hallway in their department, and he goes, oh, who are they for? And your man goes, oh, the minister. Oh, I'll take them into the office. So no, the new minister. So already, you know, things shut down. Mm-hmm. They look ahead and they're not going to get your work done when they know you'll be out the door in 2 months.
The other person then who'll be under pressure to get things turned around is Leo Varadkar, who apparently is writing his autobiography. He may want that out before the upcoming election.
He might. I've got a story there to tell you, Anton, by the way. Leo rang, I hate to say this now, this is my best friend, but he rang me about this because...
He rang you?
I've got an agent, did you know, for my last book. I'm very posh. And my agent is so punchy, he approached Leo to say, can I be your agent and do the book deal? And that guy, and Leo then wanted to call me and ask my opinion of the agent. And I said, great, he's a great guy, by the way. Let's give my agent a plug here. Max is his name. So isn't it strange? Yeah, so he was on to me saying, what I recommend.
So you're responsible, in essence, for Leo Varadkar's
autobiography. I'm happy to take 10% of the sales. Yeah. and to put it that way. But it's interesting, isn't it? That's a former Taoiseach, of course, have written books, haven't they? The big question is, will it sell? And the publishers will be hopeful that a really interesting book by...
And according to the papers this weekend, he's already 100,000 words into it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's obviously very keen to get the thing written. And it's going to be interesting. I wonder what, it'll obviously, through the pandemic, that'll have to feature a lot, I imagine.
Sorry, this could be the best book ever. Like, if he was to come out and to say, here's all the dirt, here's all the gossip, here's what I really think of Eamon Ryan, Micheál Martin, whoever else. Like, we'd be salivating, Sean. We'd be going mental for it. And there's, sure, he was Taoiseach for so long. He was Taoiseach twice. He was in government around the cabinet table for so long. If he's any dirt on Simon Harris, of course, any dirt on anybody.
This I've has never seen you look this
be the best book ever. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, we can't wait for the headlines that'll come out of it.
Sindo serialization. She's looking forward.
Only if there's anything good in it. Like if it's a Bornal book, you know, we're not very interested.
Can I ask, therefore, can you point to an instance where a Taoiseach has retired and written a book filled with the kind of salacious dirt that you want? Because I can't think of one.
But like, it's a great opportunity. He's going around. He's on this radio station and others. He's turning into a form of political commentator. He, like, you know, he's a man of great experience, and he is also, you know, relatively young. I find his insight into the world very interesting. So he's got a lot of stories, got a lot of things to share. Niamh Horan tells us that it'll be sort of personal and political as well. So great, I'm ready for it, but it has to deliver. That's the key point.
You want.
A text to say, the slide of Sinn Féin is hardly surprising. The flip-flopping policy U-turns and over-reliance on a few reliable spokespeople. The party needs to get its act together. The constant negativity and faux outrage is their problem. They need to learn that nothing is a crisis if everything is a crisis. Sinn Féin perhaps says another, people are tired of high-pitched outrage at just about everything. But high-pitched outrage, this is a bit that I don't understand. It was working very well for quite a long time. But it was a successful strategy.
Yeah, but it's a long run-in to do it, isn't it? And it, for anybody to be the favourites for something for 3 or 4 years, you know, people go off it a little bit. I wonder as well, right? Whatever about the faux outrage, yeah, I think there's definitely a point there.
I cite you Keir Starmer and Labour.
I was just about to mention Keir Starmer and Labour because he ran a pretty crap, boring campaign. He doesn't have an innovative policy in his head and yet was able to just walk in and go against it. Whereas Sinn Féin have been trying to do that for 4 years and people are finally getting a little bit sick of it and say, well, where's your policy on that, on immigration? We're questioning your policy on housing, on health or whatever. And where I think Simon Harris has been very good is just taking the sting out of those bits. You know, Gaza could have been a thing against the government. We recognise the state of Palestine takes a bit of the sting out of it. The housing issue and health is always going to be a problem for him. But you look at some of the others, just taken that little bit of an edge off it that will allow voters who were floating on the edge of voting for Sinn Féin to say, oh, well, actually, I might be better off and my taxes might be better or whatever, and go back to him. So he hasn't undone all the damage he could do. But getting to 24, 25% is a pretty key mark for Fine Gael, because if you're at 25%, you're suddenly looking at a seat in every constituency. It's almost the quota in a 3-seat constituency. So then you're in a position to get one in everywhere and looking at 2 seats in the 5-seaters. It's a mark that could put him, and 44% of the people in the Sindo think today, in the office to stay as the Taoiseach.
Well, on that question, what's the delta between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil that is wide enough to allow either of them to say, you know, this rotating thing, welcome to being Taoiseach?
Yeah, it's a good point. They're not far off each other. It'll be whoever finishes in those seats.
No, but as in, how big a gap between the two allows them not to rotate Taoiseach?
Oh, not to rotate it. Oh, I don't think the gap is there. I think you're talking, you would have to see Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael slide to somewhere between 7-8 points. You'd be talking about 20 seats of a difference. It won't happen.
So we're into the business.
Taoiseach is here today.
If we have a Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael government, we are into rotating Taoiseach forever and ever.
Yes, forever and ever.
Sure,
and
the two parties are so interchangeable now. They're more or less the same. Like, there is, and even if you look at the local elections, for example, it was remarkable from the transfers and the Europeans. I mean, they're so incredibly transfer friendly because they've become more or less this one entity now.
Yeah, I believe they're called Co-Taoiseach is the name that was being used, wasn't it?
Yeah,
effectively.
Richard Boy Barrett, yeah.
Now, you know what they say? You know that thing about academic politics where the it is so vicious because the stakes are so low? We have an election along those lines as well next year, which is the presidential. And there's lots of supposition and speculation about who is going to want to be parked out in the auras. And Gabia, the prime candidate apparently is Micheál Martin.
Yes, and this has been a rumour for a long time, but apparently now he is planning, according to the Irish Mail on Sunday, he's planning to step down at some stage next year and make way for the newer generation. He is looking to head towards the Oras. Apparently when he was looking at his very small ministerial reshuffle there over the past week. That was kind of some of his thinking. Of course, Jack Chambers was appointed deputy leader of the party in recent weeks and finance minister last week. So the view is very much that he's the heir apparent, certainly as selected by the leadership, you know, more or less anointed a successor. Obviously, somebody else might want to contest that gauntlet, but it would be an interesting race for sure. Of course, we know that the presidential campaigns are very, very cutthroat, and every single skeleton that you may or may not have in your closet is dug up, resurrected and taken back out. Micheál Martin, in fairness to him, he doesn't have that many. He wasn't Taoiseach for very long. He was, he's been party leader of Fianna Fáil for a very long time. But I suppose there would be a view within Fianna Fáil that perhaps if they were to put forward a candidate, he may be a very good option. Bertie Ahern enters stage left, and of course he's wanted, I think John Lee writes, he's openly flirted with the idea of running for the presidency for a long time. Now, he does have a few skeletons in his closet, of course, and that would all be rehashed. Perhaps Fianna Fáil might say, you know what, Micheál Martin maybe is a little bit of a cleaner image than Bertie Ahern maybe. If you look on the Fine Gael side, Mairéad McGuinness, we know, has been in the talks, mentioned for that role as well. Francis Fitzgerald also may have an interest in it. And let's not forget independent TD Luke Mink-Flanagan, who of course topped the poll. And he did say, didn't he, I would consider a bid for the Oras. So perhaps he might enter the race, but it would be interesting to see how that campaign unfolds.
And the other people who are getting mentioned in and amongst that, John, is Gerry Adams getting his shot. The Mail is suggesting Mick Wallace might have a little run at it now that he's no longer in Europe.
Yeah, the picture.
Enda Kenny?
The picture is like looking at leaders' questions in 2011, isn't it? Enda Kenny, Bertie, Gerry Adams, Murray McGuinness. They will all be people who are the big hitters of the past. The thing about this next presidential election is it is a potentially a job for 14 years. It's very hard to unseat a sitting president. Mm. And we saw it with Mary McAleese. We've seen it with Michael D. Higgins. So this will be the one where we get the big hitters going, because they will fancy their chances much more now than they would in 7 years' time, where you have an incumbent to battle. I would take anything about Micheál Martin's future with a huge pinch of salt, because the amount of people Micheál Martin tells about his future is about two, including himself. So they
God, if we could get that other one.
I'm telling you now. She might talk to you. But he keeps everything very, very tight. But that said, you can see the markers he's laying down. Jack Chambers is the anointed one now. Michael McGrath has moved off to Europe. There will be other people in the party who might have something to say about it. You know, Darragh O'Brien, for example, Jim O'Callaghan, potentially, about a future leadership. But you see the direction of travel, and it would make a certain amount of sense that he might want this very presidential job. And he'd be a favourite. He's consistently been, up until this poll actually, I think, the most popular leader in the country over the last 4 years. He's always outpolled Mary Lou McDonald, even when Sinn Féin were streets ahead of Fianna Fáil. Simon Harris has nipped ahead of him. I don't think we're talking about him for the presidential next. But yeah, if Micheál Martin went forward, he'd be very serious.
You also then get, of course, a load of the non-party people who arrive in, like the Sean Gallaghers back in the day, like the Gavin Duffys. Luke, any interest?
No, not for the moment. I'm too busy. But I think it's actually a very important job, you know, even though we might
say,
I'll tell you why, because it represents our country. And Michael D, I think we'd all agree. And I've luckily met him a couple of times myself, you know. So and it's a great venue for things and welcoming people and all that kind of stuff.
You science and all that.
Yeah.
What's the thing about that? A thesis only works if it is disprovable. Where have we ever had a bad president?
Oh, well, we remember the thundering disgrace, Anthony. Are you old enough to remember that?
I am old
Carullo
enough.
Carullo Dolly. Remember him? He was from my hometown of Bray.
Okay,
maybe I was 12 at the time. Remember that show? Maybe you're too young. He was called a thundering disgrace. So maybe there have been ones that haven't been as optimum as we would have liked.
Would you want the gig?
Well, it's very lucrative. I think 330,000 approx is the salary plus expenses every single year. Very difficult to unseat an incumbent. So for 14 years, you're getting that money. I mean, it's very difficult to not want it. But it is a very, very... First of all, there's two things to it. You have to get the nomination from your party if you are running for a party. You have to get those nominations, as you know, from the local county councils and the TDs and so on. But also you have to get through the campaign. And the campaigns for presidential races are so grueling. I mean, everything
and
is
brutal
hashed
and
out.
Demeaning.
They are horrendous.
They're
good fun, of course, for journalists, but
journalists.
You do have to get through them. And that can be personally, of course, quite taxing. But
14 years of shaking hands and standing around.
14 years of garden parties on 300 grand a year. What are you talking about?
I suppose, yeah, there's two sides to every
story.
Someone has
to do it. It's a tough job, but someone else.
Text to say, Anton, no Taoiseach should ever let themselves down by bringing out a book, whatever Gabi says.
Oh, there you have it.
If you have a view, 53106 or 087 1400 106. After the break, Aer Lingus is reported to be giving its cabin crew iPhones in what in it seems to be the implication is a suggestion that this is a negotiating tactic against pilots. I don't quite understand how, but we'll get into that after this break. We'll talk in a minute about Aer Lingus and the iPhones that cabin crew are receiving. We might just do one final piece in relation to politics, though, and that's politics across the water and Joe Biden and the continuing drumbeat of whether or not he can continue on the Democratic ticket goes on. Do you think he's toast, Luke? Because that George Stephanopoulos interview needed to be an absolutely barnstorming performance. It was far from it.
My heart sinks, to be honest. I mean, you see him because obviously he came to Ireland, good guy, people feel overall, and there he is. It's a bit sad in a way, isn't it? You know, and then you wonder about himself. How does he feel about these things? He must be aware of it. You know, great piece in the Sin though by Eilish O'Hanlon talking about ageism though, and they're all against him now. Just because you're a bit older doesn't mean you're. Should we put on the scrap heap, remember? It's different with him. There's evidence, as far as I can gather from talking to my medical friends, of decline, you know? Mm. And we can see it over the past 3-4 years or so.
Your medical friends say what?
Well, there's something going on. Cognitive decline. Maybe it's something like Parkinson's, the way he freezes and stuff. They can't tell, of course. This is all speculation. But anybody looking at him would have to say something's happened. I mean, even since he was in Ireland, when he gave that great speech, something's changed, hasn't it? Now, maybe he said he had a bad cold. He was severely jet-lagged. Maybe that was part of it, you know. But the Democrats are scared, from what I can tell. So it's a strange situation.
See, that, I think, is the critical issue, is that both of those are transitory. So if he had come out on George Stephanopoulos with the cold gone and the jet lag,
guns blazing.
Yeah, yeah, here we are, there's old Joe Biden back.
And he was asked, but you rested for 6 days before it, so how could jet lag be part of it? Didn't do himself any favours, I think, with that interview. He was hoping, obviously, to knock it out of the park, as they say in America, but he didn't quite do that. Didn't help him in the end, did it? It was a bit of a shame.
And of course, this has an impact on where the money goes, Sean, because the Democratic donors are the ones who are beginning to look and say, are we providing cash to a campaign that's going to dissolve?
Yeah, everyone is now looking. The sharks are circling. You know, I thought Nancy Pelosi really stuck a knife in him this week when she said, is this just an episode or is it something more? And I do, like Lucas said, I feel really sorry for him, actually, because it must be so frustrating. And I can to a small degree understand it. When I had my chemo treatment earlier on in the year, one of the side effects is brain fog. And, you know, I was sitting at the table having dinner going, will you pass me the thing you used to stab with, you know, and for the life of me, couldn't remember the name for fork. Was looking at the TV, at the news and seeing politicians. And I was like, I knew that 3 months ago, I knew how many votes you got in the last election. I knew who your family was, knew your constituency, and I can't remember your name now. And at least for me, it was transitory. I knew that I was going to come out of this when the thing is over. For him, it's not. And when you still have, and anyone who has a relative who's gone through dementia or anything like that will know possibly the worst time is when they are still somewhat lucid and they know that something is wrong. And it's a horrible, horrible time because they know something is going wrong and there's a decline there or there's black spots in the memory. So on a personal level, I feel hugely, hugely bad for me. Someone who was an incredibly impressive politician and his time has come at the wrong time for him. At the same time, he is wanting to be the leader of possibly the most powerful country in the world, and that is not something they can have. And I think actually he would have already stepped aside had the consequences of losing not been so high. If there was a candidate on the Republican side that you could look at and say, this is someone who, they're not our politics, but the country will be okay, you say, fair enough. Trump is not that candidate. Trump is someone you look at and you go, the entire place could burn down around me if I lose. And I don't think there's someone in the Democratic Party who can beat Trump other than Biden on a good day. Problem is he going to ever have a good day again?
Which is a particularly awful position for him to be in, because this is being characterised as if it is Biden's overarching ambition versus the Democratic Party. But he may be making the same way up, where he's saying, if I don't, who will? Therefore, if I can just keep it together to get to November. That's an awful position to be in.
It's an awful pressure to be under, isn't it? To put yourself under, to say it's me against democracy. And if, you know, that Gavin Newsom, Kamala Harris has been a huge disappointment. Don't think this was the plan for him to be here. She was meant to be the anointed successor and she's been terrible.
Oh, do you think?
Awfully. I think so. I think going into the last... Well, sure, remember that back in 2020, the talk was he wouldn't even see out the term.
Well, that was the talk from everybody except him.
He was bullish, of course. But no, I think if she had been stronger, he might have stepped aside and allowed her to take on Trump. Although they have a lot of people who on their merits are quite good politicians. You see a couple of the governors that you could say in a normal year they could step up. Can any of them beat Trump? You know, I don't think so.
But also from a standing start. I mean, Trump has been campaigning now for, what, 2 years, effectively. To start from zero when you only have 3 or 4 months in the campaign.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much I buy into that, because I think you can turn it around. I mean, you know, you only have to look at Simon Harris and how he's kind of come from something he didn't expect to really pushing it forward. And you're a new broom and you get excitement around the campaign and go, I'm different to Joe, I'm stronger than Joe, and I'll beat this Trump fella and we need a new era and a fresh start.
But a member of cabinet, long established in a parliamentary party, it's different to this.
Like a vice president or Gavin Newsom, you know, a governor already there. They're not unknowns in the American consciousness. They mightn't be at the same level, but you know, you could twist it that way. I don't see any of them having the muster to do it.
If you're betting, Gabia, do you think it is going to be Biden on the ticket come November?
I think, unfortunately, at this point, yes. The more serious question for me when I watch those interviews and when I watch those debates is who is running the United States of America, because it sure as hell it's not Joe Biden. And I don't like this narrative of I have to just get to November. You don't have to just get to November. You have to get to November plus 4 years. So in fairness to Trump, I don't think he's been doing his rallies and so on, but he's not been hitting it hard in terms of media interviews or being all over the shop, being overly exposed, because he doesn't need to. I mean, we've seen Joe Biden even tweeting from his X account saying, let me be really clear, I'm staying in the race. Every single press conference with Karine Jean-Pierre, his press secretary, you know, she has to answer these questions about his medical history and say, yes, the debate was a bad night. And look, the president is definitely staying in the race. And that's what the narrative is. She is also saying, I hope you're asking the other guy the same question. I mean, Trump is just visibly in much better shape than Joe Biden. And even the killer line that he delivered during the debate saying, I don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think you do either. Yeah. Even Joe Biden in the interview saying, only Lord Almighty can remove me from the race. I mean, when you look at the way when you watch him, and it is so cringeworthy and a difficult watch, like that is not, I don't think, what anybody wants in the President of the United States of America.
It's strange. I remember the State of the Union he did was fantastic a few months ago. That was only, what, 4 or 5 months ago. So something might have happened. He may have some sort of post-viral fatigue. You never know. He may well pull it out of the park again, get back into it again. You never know. I wouldn't write him off completely, for instance. But certainly all the signs are it's going in one direction, and it is heartbreaking, I think.
A text asking, ask yourself this, would you want Joe Biden making the medical decision if you were about to undergo a life-altering operation? I suppose the corollary, though, is would you want Donald Trump making that question? I saw one person asking, framing it in the way where they said, the question to ask is, if Joe Biden gets elected, will America be okay? If Donald Trump gets elected, will America be okay? Yeah. And it's down to which, that's a very difficult way up. If Biden pulls out, the Democrats will lose €125 million in funds, which cannot be transferred to anybody other than Kamala Harris. This is because the funding is on the Harris-Biden ticket. And if Newsom comes in, it can't just shift across. If you have a view, 53106 or 087-1400-106. Luke, you're very bright. Explain why this Aer Lingus getting telephones thing matters. This slightly baffles me. Aer Lingus cabin crew are getting iPhones. This in some way relates to IALPA.
Headline news. Free iPhones. Well, I guess they're trying to avoid other people going on strike, it seems to me. That's part of the reason.
Is that what it is?
It's maybe. I don't know. It could be a special present for a bonus for the hard work. But I was caught myself. I was in Berlin last week. My flight got cancelled. I had to go through London on EasyJet and then a Ryanair. I had to come back to Dublin for a family occasion. I had to take two flights to get back from Berlin. So I wasn't too well pleased. They offered me another flight, by the way, the day before during my meeting, if you know what I mean. So they offered to reschedule, but I wasn't able to do it. So I was affected by this strike, I must say.
And according to the Sunday Times, the strike is potentially going to be hugely damaging for both sides. Timing of move is questioned. This is the phones thing. But further detail from Mark Tighe and from everybody else on both sides of the dispute. Do you see any likelihood of this resolving anytime soon? Although the one positive thing is at least they're in the Labour Court.
Sorry, now Aer Lingus are saying they brought in the devices as part of its connected crew investment program. Now, the iPhones are worth about €1,000 each, so they are quite expensive. Look, obviously, we're being a little bit cynical, but it does come at an interesting time. And overall, I mean, it's just the publicity of this is so bad for Aer Lingus. And, you know, even the example that Luke is using there, you know, anybody who's travelling the next couple of weeks are going to say, there is no way I'm going to travel with Aer Lingus. Interestingly, the government has taken a bit of a backseat on this. They're saying, look, the Labour Court factions are there, get in there, get around the table and come up with some sort of a solution. The government has not really got too much sympathy for the pilots. They just seem to want just for all this to end, which I suppose is fair enough. They're trying to stay somewhat neutral. But certainly we're well into the summer season now. People are travelling here, there and everywhere. And this just seems to be rumbling on and on and on and on. And really, I don't see an end in sight for it.
There is another story that I want your view on, which is we thought it was all behind us last weekend. Just when we think we're out, they drag us back in. Taylor Swift. Reports that Taylor Swift, while she was in Dublin, handed over $25,000 to help with homelessness.
Yeah, isn't she a great human being? Where would we be without Taylor Swift? In fairness, she's got loads of money.
Hang on a minute, am I reading cynicism in that?
Fair play to her. No, sorry, she's got loads of money, and there have been stories before of her giving, I think, was it $100,000 to actually the people who drive her tour buses because they're always flat out working. She's a billionaire. She's made so much money from this tour. It is millions and millions and billions and billions. So look, if she's given the $25,000, I think, I'm not sure if it's confirmed or not. Fair play to her.
Where do you stand on her being a role model?
My bank account is open. I don't listen to her music. I didn't go to see the show. But I think she's a role model. Like she's this female phenomenon. She's taken over the world. And people like her and they like her music. A lot of them are young women. Like, that's great. Like, but I would say that about any female musician.
She's a huge, people in my lab are big fans, and I've asked them, young women, and they think she's fantastic and she speaks to them. Now, she doesn't speak to my generation, obviously enough, but her lyrics and her attitude and all this, they're really in awe of her. And I read somewhere, Anton, as well, she was making $100,000 a minute on this tour, by the way. So it's a very lucrative tour for
25K compared to that is not
that's money. The next thing, isn't it?
20 yeah. seconds worth of income.
But apparently she brought €300 million to the art. €300 million. One estimate to the Irish economy. Now, whatever that might mean is that people are spending their money and stuff. So there's an economic benefit to Taylor Swift as well.
What did you make in the Newsweek piece? Did you read it?
I didn't. What was that?
This is a Newsweek piece saying that she wasn't a good role model because she was promiscuous, because she'd had 12 boyfriends and remained unmarried.
Yeah. For crying out loud.
Biggest load of bull I ever read in my life. Honest to God.
Well, you always get the negatives, Anton. Someone has to dig into you, whatever you're doing. Obviously, the Newsweek decided we'll do a bit of a job on it.
I have to say, I was surprised. If it was a random blogger who threw that thought out there, you'd say, you know, there's always somebody who'll take a counterintuitive position. It seems strange for Newsweek editorially to say, let us launch into a misogynistic attack of 1950s vintage to the leading female artist in the world.
It's clickbait, isn't it? That's what you want. Everyone's talking about it. We're talking about it. It's all over social media. And is that like what we've come to now? Possibly it is. Look, who am I to give out about what other media organizations decide to do for clickbait? But it's just ridiculous. It's a very old fashioned view. And I think most people see it as that. Is she a role model? I don't know. I'm kind of the same camp as Gabby.
Is it not the most extraordinary double standard? We don't look at male pop artists and say, are they role models for young men? And if we compare their behaviour, you'd struggle to find the last male star who sold out the Aviva for a couple of days and handed over a cheque for $25,000 to anybody.
Well, whatever about that, the thing I kind of found amazing was that having the entire Three Arena as your merchandise store. Can you find me anyone else in the world who could do that? Your shop is the Three Arena. But also, whatever about young men, talk about older men. If we look at older pop stars and people say, look at you, Mick Jagger, having kids in your 80s or whatever, fair play to you. It's a very different double standard.
But sorry, can you give me an example of a woman who's an accomplished female musician who's on the same scale as Taylor Swift, who's got this perfectly functioning family life? Like, just because she's got a few boyfriends, I don't see how that doesn't make her a role model. Her songs are relatively, if you compare it, for example, to, you know, rap music. Like, her lyrics are relatively clean. She's singing about, you know, love interests. Maybe they like her, maybe they don't. Maybe she's, you know, got a bone to pick with them. Like, it's all relatively mild stuff and it's catchy. Some of the songs are bangers, of course, as we know. Bopping away in Coppers to Love Story. I have no shame in it. So, like, I don't really see
that. And it's a great show, apparently. A great show. It's like a real Hollywood Broadway production. It's supposed to be fantastic.
But also, when you cite rap music as a case in point, I mean, you line up Jay-Z, 50 Cent and Snoop Dogg and you have three people who, by their own admission, their former employment was dealing crack. And nobody says,
what's wrong with that, Anton?
Well, I put a question mark on the moral acceptability. Here, quick one before we wrap up. There is a story, RTE reporting that 70 is the new 60. I feel that this is the kind of thing, Luke, that you might know about. Is this the case? Are we aging in the wrong direction?
Well, I did turn 60 2 weeks ago, and can you believe? I can't believe myself. But I'm actually 40. I've got the body of an 18-year-old trapped in the mind of a 60-year-old, whatever the phrase is. But no, as we all age...
Hang on a minute, it's not meant to be the other
no,
way
hang on, yeah, I'm getting
you're
confused.
Ripped.
That was a Joe Biden moment. No, but the thing is, you know, it's fantastic. Medical advances. We're living much longer, healthier lives because of modern medicine. Isn't it tremendous? You know? So now you can reasonably expect to live into your 80s, more than likely. You know, which is a great achievement.
Because babies born now are
30, 40 years ago, 70s for men. Men were dying, remember, in their early 70s of heart attacks and various things. Statins are one. There's various reasons for this, by the way. Lifestyle is part of it. New meds are available. Cancer now is becoming a more chronic. The certain types of cancer are more chronic. So we're seeing all these advances. And that means we're seeing the likes of Trump and Biden, you know, standing for election. That unheard of 30, 40, 50 years ago, obviously. So it's a great...
I suppose to some extent, Sean, you are a physical representation of this. There is a time not too long ago that you mightn't still be with us.
100%. We were only talking about that before we came in. If it was in the 70s, I'd be dead now.
That's right.
Like genuinely would be. It was a 95% for testicular cancer. It was a 95% death rate, and it's now a 95% cure rate. And it's
is that big?
Complete and utter total reverse of it. You know, and it's completely affecting the way we age as well. I was talking to a fellow radio presenter who turned 66 this week and was shocked to death that he got the bus pass in the post. He was like, "Hey, I want to keep going." He said his exact words were, "I want to be like Pat Kenny, who's still broadcasting to the extent that he is and has more energy than ever." So look, there's hope for us all, I suppose.
I desperately want to be at that point where I can just go to Cork for free for lunch.
I can't wait to claim my pension. Like, if I could take the pension tomorrow, I would. Is that really bad?
I'm not sure about that now, though, because when it's looming a bit, you go, hang on a minute, I don't like being this old necessarily. You're in kind of two minds about that.
You're still trapped in the body of an 18-year-old.
Unlimited free time.
That's true. Yeah, there are benefits. All right.
Somebody has managed to bring all of our stories together into a central nodal point of perfection. Any chance, lads, that Taylor Swift could be asked to declare for Joe Biden?
Yeah.
And therefore solve all
not
of the problems.
Not the worst idea I've heard.
Could be happening. They're predicting that, I think. I mean, there's a prediction.
Is there?
They'll make some statement, which would have a massive effect because all her fans, you know, you can imagine.
They'll vote for her.
The Swift effect there could be huge, you know.
Guys, thank you very much. Gabia, thank you very much for your contribution today. That is Gabia Gadavaskecha, who is political correspondent at The Independent. I have to add a secondary thanks to both Sean and to Luke, because next Saturday, Sean Defoe is going to be responsible for the Anton Savage show. Sorry, next Sunday.
All the way around, yeah.
Sunday, Sean is going to be responsible for the show. And on Saturday, Luke is going to be responsible for the show. So best of luck.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.